really, really wonderful to see so many people here tonight. And I would like to thank also all of the organizers of this event, because I know how much work goes into pulling something like this together. Fabulous event. Thank you very, very much. And thank you very much for honoring me by inviting me to speak here. I was asked to come and speak about the impact of 9/11 on Arab and Muslim communities here in Canada. And just this week, Monday, the Globe and Mail, I don't know how many of you would have seen the cover of the Globe and Mail, but there's a front page story with a photograph. These are school children. And the title of the story is Emergency, Code Red, Code Red. Without missing a beat, the children run to a corner and huddle behind their teacher's desk. So this is a story about children in Ontario in a school being prepared for emergency measures in case their school is attacked. Now, when I looked at this picture, it's really a very interesting one. All of the children, I would, you know, draw your attention to the fact, all of the little children who are under threat and who are being prepared for emergency responses are white. I mean, there's just no other way of putting it. So, you know, it was just a graphic reminder to me when I saw this. And these are grade 2 students. So these are very, very young children. And they are practicing a lockdown drill in case there is an attack on their schools. And the teachers who are preparing them for an attack of this kind, in rural Ontario, I would remind you, talk about the risks that they are trying to deal with. And here, they specifically name the attack, the Beslan attack that took place. So there's a linking of terrorism, of the struggles of the Chechens, and innocent children in rural Ontario who are being prepared to deal with this. There's a very astute professor who's interviewed in this story, and I just want to read what she had to say. And she says, why not train them on what to do if they're struck by lightning? It's more likely to happen, right? They're more likely to be struck by lightning than being attacked Beslan style, as has now become normal to talk about, you know, what kinds of attacks to anticipate. Now, what does this kind of thing do? Well, because this is the world that we live in, this is the world that our children live in North America after 9/11. So what does this do? It teaches children to be very, very afraid at a very young age. Who does it teach them to fear? Who does it teach them to be afraid of and be constantly watching? Terrorists. And who are the terrorists? What are the images that children see of terrorists? What are the images that we as adults see of terrorists in the media? The image of the terrorist today is the Muslim, right? And who are the Muslims? Who are the Muslims who are being wholesale associated, linked with terrorism? Who are these Muslims? If we look after the attack of 9/11, immediately in Canada, like in the United States, people were attacked on the streets. If we look at who it was that was attacked, it becomes very, very clear that Muslim today doesn't just refer to a religious identity. Muslim today has become a racialized category of exclusion. If we look at who was attacked in Canada and in the United States, Hindu temples were desecrated, Sikh temples were desecrated. In the United States, 2 Sikh men were shot to death. Hindus were attacked. Pakistanis were attacked. In the United States, an Aboriginal woman, a Cherokee woman, was attacked. So when we look at who is being constructed in the popular imagination as this potential Muslim terrorist, what becomes very clear is that it is black and brown people who are being targeted, regardless of what their religion is like. As I've said, Hindus were attacked in this country and in the United States, so were Sikhs. And so when we look at how this terrorist threat is being constructed in 9/11, that the nation has to watch itself against and prepare itself against, This is a racialized category. This is people of color who are being talked about. I think it's very, very clear to understand that, because this is what we're facing. As many people noted and were very much aware of, after 9/11, there was this backlash against people who looked like Muslims. Women reported being chased in parking lots, scarves being torn off their heads. Children reported being bullied in schools. In fact, a number of Muslim associations issued warnings to parents not to send their children to school for the week following the attacks, because of the level of harassment that the children were facing. Now, this is the popular racism that came quite spontaneously from below and was directed, in this country, it was directed very much against people of color. But what is also important to recognize is that the state also mobilized a racism from above. And it did so in a way that specifically linked the terrorist threat to immigration policy, to refugee policy. Amongst one of the first actions that was taken by the government was to issue special guidelines for immigration officers at the borders to watch out, to increase surveillance against this threat which was entering the nation and to secure the nation's borders. So what we saw was this popular racism from below. At the same time, we had this very organized racism coming from the state. The anti-terrorism measures, they explicitly linked immigrants and refugees with this terrorist threat. So I think it's also very, very important for us to recognize that while initially many of us thought this was a backlash against people of color, against the Muslim community, against those who look like Muslims, but it became very, very clear, very immediately, that this was not just a backlash that was coming from the bottom up, but that this was a very calculated restructuring of Canadian society that had been initiated by the state, and that this would have long-term consequences. These were not short-term measures that were being put into place, but the changes that were being brought would have long-term consequences. So I think it's really important that after 9/11, the popular sentiment in the media that was we were completely overwhelmed with and saturated with was, we are all Americans now. Many newspapers had that as their banner headlines. I don't know if people remember that or not. But we are all Americans now. There was this intense identification with the United States, with Americans after 9/11. But at the same time, there was this intense exclusionary impulse towards people of color, who were defined as not only a threat to the United States now, but a threat to the nation itself. And Muslims became constituted in the popular imagination in Canada, as they did in the US, I would also argue, as the biggest threat to the nation's security. And that is the space that we have been assigned to following 9/11. And I think it's very important to realize the racialized discourse that goes along with how Muslim people are represented. Surveillance has increased of immigrants and refugees. The anti-terrorism measures have especially strengthened state powers of surveillance, of deportation. Many, many people of color have been visited, interviewed by CSIS in this country, treated with suspicion in public places. Again, this is very, very interesting, how this mobilizing of the responsible citizen against this potential threat, which is supposed to be surrounding the community, surrounding the nation, has been mobilized. From the United States, there were warnings at first that it was at the border that the threats were most immediate. That was soon followed by calls to citizens to watch out for suspicious behavior in shopping malls, in apartment buildings. Homeland Security specifically issued warnings that they had information that apartment buildings were going to be targeted, that shopping malls were going to be targeted for attacks. Now, these are the places where people live out their everyday lives. This is the places that we spend our time. This is where our children spend their time. And these were the sites that were being mobilized as the sites of danger, as the sites for surveillance. And I want to give you just one example, one small example of what impact this is having on young immigrant and refugee girls and young women in BC here in Vancouver. Just after 9/11, I was involved part of a research project, and we were looking at young immigrant and refugee women here in Vancouver and at other sites in the province, looking at their experiences with the school system, with social service agencies, and hopefully the idea was to come up with recommendations so that they would have better access to social services that they were entitled to, that they would have better access within the school system. And I conducted a focus group with a young group, about 12 young women, between the ages of about 11 to 13, the oldest one, I think there was one who was 14. Anyway, we had a little focus group and we asked them about their experiences within the school system, how their teachers treated them, what problems they had. And in the middle of this discussion, they brought up the attacks of 9/11. And what the what their responses were, and how angry and afraid they were, and you know they had a lot of exchange of ideas about what they thought had happened. Anyway, as soon as the focus group was over, the girls left and they waited outside while I cleared up the space where we'd held it. And they waited outside, and I was in the center for about 20 minutes. I went outside and I still saw them standing there. And I said, do you have any concern? And they wanted to know what was going to happen with the discussion that I had recorded. And, you know, we'd been through the whole process. I'd explained the ethical guidelines that nobody's name would be revealed. In fact, I didn't even know what their names were. They could have given me a false name, just made up a name to give me so that there would be no way of identifying them. I explained all of that. I explained to them my responsibilities to maintain their confidentiality. And we stood outside for about 40 minutes, and there was nothing I could say that would reassure them and make them want to go home. They kept asking, well, who will have access to these tapes? Who will have access to the transcripts? And in the end, I just said, look, tell me what your concern is. And my immediate thought was, you know, they'd been very candid about their school teachers, about their counselors, about principals, about parents, difficulties they were having. And I thought, okay, this is the concern. They're afraid that their parents will get hold of this transcript or the school principal will. So I said, what is your concern? And immediately, all of them said that the comments that they had made about 9/11 and their responses to it, their experiences of it, they didn't want anybody at all to have access to that tape. They were afraid of that. Was the part of the discussion that they were really most concerned about getting out. So it just tells you this chill, that chilly climate that is imposed on young people, young Muslims in this particular case, who feel that they are not even able to say anything, voice anything. And this is the impact that 9/11 is having on young people right across this province. So I think it's really important to see how far-reaching the effects of all of this are going to be, not just for us as adults, but for our children as well.